Guess who's back, 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 back again. Shady's back. Comrade, and welcome back to Season 3, Episode 6 of Spectre. Back after a relatively long hiatus, but back nonetheless. And in today's episode, we'll be examining the life, work and legacy of popular Scottish communist, Bolshevik consul, John McLean. Born on the 24th of August 1879, McLean was a Pollock Shaws-born Scottish school teacher and communist of the Red Clydeside era. He was most notable for his outspoken opposition to the First World War, which saw him arrested under the Defence of the Realm Act, and he lost his teaching post. Following his release, he became a full-time Marxist lecturer and organiser. In April 1918, he was arrested for sedition, and his 75-minute speech from the dock became a celebrated text for Scottish socialists and revolutionaries. He was sentenced to 5 years penal servitude, but was released after the November armistice. McLean believed that Scottish workers were especially fitted to lead a revolution in Britain, and talked of, quote, Celtic communism, end quote, inspired by, quote, clan spirit, end quote. However, his launch of a Scottish Workers' Republican Party and a Scottish Communist Party were greatly unsuccessful. McLean first came into politics through the Pollock Shaws Progressive Union and Robert Blackford's Merry England. It was through here that he became convinced that the living standards of the working classes could only be improved by social revolution, and it was as a Marxist that he joined the Social Democratic Federation and remained in the organisation as it formed into the British Socialist Party. In 1906, McLean gave a series of speeches in Pollock Shaws, which led to the formation of an SDF branch. McLean was also an active member of the cooperative movement, and it was his role that led to the Renfrewshire Cooperative Societies to pressurise local school boards to provide facilities for adult classes in economics. By the time of the First World War, McLean's socialism developed to a revolutionary nature. Although he worked with others on the Clyde Workers' Committee, who were more reformist in outlook, such as his friend James Maxson, he heavily opposed the war, and he felt it was a war of imperialism, which divided workers from one another. His outspoken and clearly demonstrated political statements and public profile made him well known to authorities, and on the 27th of October 1915, he was arrested under the Defence of the Realm Act, and he was subsequently sacked by the Governed School Board for his teaching post at Lawn Street Primary School. Following this, he became a full-time Marxist lecturer and organiser, educating workers in Marxist theory. This led to him founding the Scottish Labour College. Not long after his release from prison in 1917, McLean was elected to the chair of the Third All-Russian Congress of Soviets, and a month later appointed Bolshevik consul in Scotland in 1918. He established a consulate located at 12 South Portland Street in Glasgow, but was refused legitimate recognition by the British government, who, alongside other imperialist forces, were working to stop the formation of the USSR. Although he'd been appointed Bolshevik representative in Scotland, he spoke against the Communist Party of Great Britain numerous times, even though it had absorbed the British Socialist Party, to which he originally belonged to. McLean declared himself in favour of a Scottish Workers' Republic, arguing that Lenin's acceptance of a British Communist Party was a mistake based on inadequate information. McLean believed that workers in Scotland could develop in a revolutionary direction more swiftly than their comrades in England and Wales, and in 1920 he attempted to found a Scottish Communist Party. This failed drastically. This party renamed itself the Communist Labour Party and dropped McLean's distinctive positions, and so he quickly left. He then attempted to found a new Scottish Communist Party, again without success. In 1923, McLean founded the Scottish Workers' Republican Party, which twisted communist ideologies with Scottish nationalism. Maclean's call for a communist Republic of Scotland was based on the belief that traditional Scottish Gaelic society was structured along the lines of, quote, community, end quote. He argued that the, quote, the communism of the clans must be re-established on a modern basis, end quote. And he raised the slogan, quote, back to community and forward to communism, end quote. During his time in captivity, Maclean had been on hunger strike and prolonged force feeding had permanently affected his health. He collapsed during a speech and died of pneumonia, age 44. So what was Maclean's legacy? And why is he still remembered and cast as a standing figure of the communist movement in Scotland? Despite Maclean's communist thought resting in a bed of nationalism and historical nostalgia, Maclean's agitational efforts were targeted against the key elements of capitalism and exploitation to which the workers of Scotland felt at the time. He left a legacy claimed by both Scottish nationalists and the labour movement, making him rare in this respect among historical figures in Scotland, who've usually only ever been attributed to one movement in itself. His respected reputation saw thousands of people lining the streets of Glasgow to watch his funeral procession pass. The modern-day Scottish Socialist Party lay claim to Maclean's legacy, more so the Scottish Republican Socialist Movement, a previous faction within the SSP. Now, Maclean was famed not just for his organising abilities, but for his inspiring and agitating public speeches. Speeches carried out on the streets, the shipyards, and even in the courtrooms saw workers and passers-by captivated in the emotional delivery of John Maclean's speeches. His most famous speech was that which was spoken during his trial for sedition in 1918. He conducted his own defence in a defiant manner, refusing to make a plea, and when asked if he objected to any of the jurors, he stated, quote, I object to the whole lot of them, end quote. The prosecution's case was built upon the testimony of so-called witnesses who had attended his meetings and who quoted extracts from Maclean's speeches using notes they had written from memory after meetings. Maclean objected to his words being taken out of context, stating, quote, the main parts of my speech in which my themes are developed are omitted. I want to expose the trickery of the British government and their police and their lawyers, end quote. This speech from the dock has become folklore for the Scottish Left Labour movement and stands as a tribute to Maclean's revolutionary character. Lasting some 75 minutes, Maclean's speech began, quote, it has been said that they cannot fathom my motive. For the full period of my active life, I have been a teacher of economics to the working classes, and my connection has always been that capitalism is rotten to its foundations and must give place to a new society. I had a lecture, the principal heading of which was, Thou shall not steal, thou shall not kill. And I pointed out that as a consequence of the robbery that goes on in all civilised countries today, our respective countries have had to keep armies, and that, inevitably, our armies must clash together. On that and on other grounds, I consider capitalism the most infamous, bloody and evil system that mankind has ever witnessed. My language is regarded as extravagant language, but the events of the past 4 years have proved my connection, end quote. Maclean went on to say, quote, I wish no harm to any human being, but I, as one man, am going to exercise my freedom of speech. No human being in the face of the earth, no government is going to take from me my right to speak, my right to protest against wrong, my right to do everything that is for the benefit of mankind. I am not here then as the accused. I am here as the accuser of capitalism, dripping with blood from head to foot. End quote. Maclean's speech concluded with, quote, I have taken up unconstitutional action at this time because of the abnormal circumstances and because precedent has been given by the British government. I am a socialist and have been fighting and will fight for an absolute reconstruction of society for the benefit of all. I am proud of my conduct. I have squared my conduct with my intellect, and if everyone had done so, this war would not have taken place. I act square and clean for my principles. No matter what your accusations against me may be, no matter what reservations you keep at the back of your head, my appeal is to the working class. I appeal exclusively to them because they, and they only, can bring about the time when the whole world will be in one brotherhood, on a sound economic foundation. That, and that alone, can be the means of bringing about a reorganisation of society. That can only be obtained when the people of the world get the world and retain the world. End quote. Now, despite this rousing speech, McLean was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment in Peterhead. However, a militant campaign was launched for his release following the armistice on the 11th of November. He was then subsequently released on December 3rd, 1918. Now, McLean, despite his initial stance in the matter, became committed to Irish independence as part of a worldwide anti-imperialist struggle. McLean was initially a supporter of Home Rule for Ireland, but opposed an independent Ireland as he was afraid that an independent Catholic Ireland would be disastrous. When the Easter Rising happened, he distanced himself from it because he viewed it as a bourgeois democratic revolution and in direct contradiction with his pacifist principles. Thankfully though, his position would change following the end of the Easter Rising. In July 1919, McLean would visit Dublin for the first time. By the end of his life, his attitude towards Ireland had been radicalised, and he gave up his pacifist position to physical force in the fight for Irish republicanism. McLean saw that the British government's foreign policy towards Ireland was intended to, quote, starve Irish youths out of their native land, end quote, and Ireland's independence would decrease Irish immigration to Scotland, thus allowing for more opportunities for Scottish workers. McLean isn't just remembered in Scotland and Ireland for his efforts in the communist and anti-imperialist movement. The Soviet Union also honoured McLean with an avenue in central Leningrad. It has now, like Leningrad and St. Petersburg, been reverted to its original name. However, he was honoured further by the USSR in 1979 on the centenary of his birth when a commemorative postage stamp depicting McLean in portrait by Peter Emelievich Bendel was issued. So what must we do with McLean's legacy? How can we weaponise it beyond what we have already? From the books, to the pamphlets, to the commemorative walks that we have year in, year out, what else can we use to keep the spirit of John McLean and the communist labour movement active and fiery today? Now, McLean was labelled at the time the most dangerous man in Britain by British military intelligence forces. His ability to agitate the working masses caused the government to quake in their boots in fear that Glasgow would follow in the steps of the Russian workers in Petrograd. This fear didn't just come from the speeches and writings of McLean, socialists and communists of the time, but it came from McLean's ability, alongside his comrades, to organise and mobilise the masses, which served as a tool and which struck fear amongst the bourgeois in Britain. The 1915 rent strike saw over 20,000 tenants led in a militant fashion against the parasitic landlords who were opportunistically raising rents as munitions workers moved into the city. These striking actions resulted in victory, but this wasn't the end of efforts for McLean and others. Keeping workers militant and discovering their class consciousness was key. The real victory following the rent strike was in seeing the increase of attendees and regular attendees at local socialist and communist schools studying the works of Marx. The reality for us is that it's simply not enough for our movement to rely on spontaneous mass mobilisations in response to wrongdoings, tragedies, disputes, actions of war, strike, and so on. Our failure to awaken the class consciousness of workers who have been attending demonstrations and marches has been built on a key failure to keep Marxism at the core of our political analysis on a number of key issues in our current time. The so-called left across Britain has devolved into a networking group for liberals who have rejected class as the focal point of political campaigning. Instead, organising is based upon the set points and maintenance of bourgeois morality. Organisers failing to properly analyse any global conflict, imperialist or inter-imperialist, through the lens of Marxism or class. Leaving organisations and so-called workers' parties, towing the line of either NATO or uncritically supporting opposing imperialist forces. The fact of the matter is, our organising must revolve around the core ideals and principles of Marx, Engels, Lenin and Stalin. Years gone by, our movement was regularly able to agitate across communities, exposing and retaining workers to Marxist literature. We were able to effectively, and I'll say that again, effectively build and develop cadres into credible communists and socialists. Men and women who were not just capable of speaking, but putting the words from the soapboxes into action. Men like John McLean, men like Willie Gallagher, men like Tom Bell, and women like Helen Crawford. In an age of rabid neoliberalism, which has driven the masses to respect politics as a taboo subject, unfit for dinner tables, unfit for workplace canteens, and unfit for general discussion, we must fight to fracture this bourgeois idea and educate the masses. In order to build for a socialist Britain, we need to be creating the next John McLeans, the next Fidel Castros. And in order to secure a socialist and communist future, we need to be creating the next Vladimir Lenins, the next Joseph Stalins. In our day-to-day struggles, we all stand as the accusers of capitalism, dripping in blood from head to foot. Thanks again, comrades, for tuning in to another episode of Spectre. As always, leave us a like, a review, on whatever platform you're listening in on. And of course, be sure to share us with your friends, family, co-workers and comrades. To examine the works of John McLean, there are a number of free-to-use online resources, as well as books that can be purchased with the selected works. As such, a special shout-out goes to the re-established Unity Books, the official bookshop of the Communist Party, with over 5,000 books, pamphlets and periodicals from across the workers' movement. I'll be sure to link their social media as well as their buying page in the description below. As stated throughout this episode, it's merely not enough for us to demonstrate. It's not enough for us to preach. We have to be growing this circle bigger. We have to be strengthening the working masses across Scotland. This takes a number of positions, through a number of avenues, from the trade union movement to the anti-war movement, our local trade union councils and beyond. Men like John McLean and Willie Gallagher set the standard for what a Scottish communist looks like. Active, always. Active in their community, active in communities outside of their own, and active internationally. So let's leave today, ready, armed and knowing what to do. Because if there's one thing we know, and know for certain, is that the Clydeside will be red again. There goes my hero, watch him out.